It's up now in our pregame show to visit with Tom Ceratori, head coach of the Beavers. Tom, you and I have talked about this a lot over the years, but I was asked by a bunch of people again this week, what the heck happened on Saturday? They won by four on Friday. How long did it take you to get used to that aspect of college hockey where you can play great and lose, and you can play somewhat lousy and still win?
Like right away. It's just the way our world is, and that's sports. So it doesn't take too long to have, you know, people figure it out, teams figure it out, and how you can be good one night, how you're not going to be as good the other night. The other aspect of it is the team that loses has desperation. There's just so many factors that play into it. So, no, I mean, this, like, I knew exactly what I was going to see, and exactly what I thought I was going to see, I did see on Saturday.
After the video review, here it gets called for the 5-minute contact to the head penalty. Years past, I was a five and done. That rule change this year gives refs a little more leeway. I'm kind of leaning to answering this question, yes, but is that maybe one of the best rule changes college hockey's had in the last decade?
I don't know. I can't. I need to have all the rule changes in front of me to answer that question proficiently, but it's a good rule to make sure, too. Like, that was not even – that did not warrant you know, Yuri getting kicked out of the game, for example. Most of these contact to the heads or hitting from behinds, they're not flagrant by nature. There's no intent to injure, and that's the problem. I mean, sometimes if you have a hard, steadfast rule that this person's out of the game, and it's just like, are you kidding me? There's going to be incidental contact a lot of times. That person shouldn't get thrown out. So it's that. It was the NCAA's way of probably softening the blow a little bit, and I think it was all predicated last year in Michigan Tech when Hallinan got kicked out early against Duluth in the NCAA tournament. And it was just such a, you know, I don't want to sit there and say it, but it was a contact to the head that was not even close to, like, with the intention of doing that is what I'm getting at.
You're tied for 34th nationally right now in the penalty kill, about 10% lower than probably your average has been in your tenure. You've had so many different new guys on the penalty kill. Start of the year was rough. How much more faith do you have in that group now than you did back in October?
Well, it's... Yeah, we're clipping along. We're clipping along, but boy, the power plays the penalty kills aren't great overall in college hockey right now. A lot less than it was a few years ago, and I think there's reasons for that. Number one is we're figuring out ways on the power play, different entries, you know, different things going on. Our game's evolving on the power play, just like the NHL is, like everybody else does. So we're a little further behind right there, I think, as a group. But no, we're not dialed in like we were a couple of years ago. But there's a lot of reasons for that, and a lot of it is just experience with guys. So hey, we weren't very good last year with the same experienced guys. I mean, we took a step back. So you know, before that, you know, who knows why, but we're not where we want to be, but we're making progress.
What'd you like best about the 5-minute kill last Saturday?
Well, I like that there was not a lot of whistles. I thought we got into a good rhythm, even for the second period with a long line change. I thought we got into a good rhythm, and we got to use a lot of different guys, and we didn't really get them. We didn't allow them to get set up in the zone, and when they get set up in the zone, they could be extremely dangerous.
You mentioned you know, power plays are going well this year for a lot of teams. You're 15th right now. You're at 23%. That used to get you top 10 on a regular basis. There's two teams over 30 this year. It's all cyclical, though, isn't it?
It is. And that's why you just keep coaching. You just keep practicing. You just keep working. You just keep showing video. And you just try to get on little runs. It's all about little runs, little runs, little runs in everything you're doing, whether it's offensively, whether it's the PP, whether it's the PK. But it's all about just getting on little runs.
More with Coach Ceratori when we come back. Budweiser pregame show here on the Beaver Radio Network. Welcome back to our pregame show, part two with head coach Tom Ceratori. Tom, you're without Adam Flamang, who got hurt in Bowling Green. You're also going to be without Eric Martin. He got cut by a skate last Saturday. I'm actually surprised that doesn't happen more often. As fast as guys are right now and some of the collisions that you get, are you surprised it doesn't happen more often?
I don't know. I mean, it's still a freakish injury. That was really weird, you know, Marty's injury. So probably not. I mean, I don't think it, you know, I mean, those situations where a skate's going to obviously hit that soft area, you know, above your kneecap, for example, I just think the law of averages aren't going to warrant that that's going to happen a lot. But once in a while, I mean, those are the things you're going to have some odd, freakish injuries. And that was one last weekend. And, you know, I don't think the speed of the game and those things have anything to do with an injury like that is all I'm getting at, Schulze.
You lose two multi-dimensional, multi-skilled forwards. How does that hurt your offense?
Well, I mean, on paper, it doesn't help us. That's for sure. You don't want two of your better players out, but that's just the nature of the beast in our world. And other guys are going to have to pick up the slack, and we're just going to have to, you know, we're just going to have to get it done.
You still have 13 healthy forwards, so you still have a lineup, but we've seen it happen over the years to some teams where, you know, they got to move a guy from D up to forward. Who's your best candidate for that right now, if it ever did come to it?
Boy, I don't know. That's a good question. We've never talked about it, so for me just to throw that out at you right now, I wouldn't want to do that because that could happen, and then I could change my mind. I don't know right now. There's
all right. What are some of the skills that are needed?
Well, I don't necessarily. It all depends on what you want to accomplish. I think as a coach, I mean, a lot of times you might want a hard, physical, forechecking type guy who's going to raise holy heck up ice, or you might want to have somebody with a little moxie maybe that might be able to, you know, help that group offensively. So it all depends on what you want out of that fourth line. Basically, what do you want out of that fourth line? And whatever you want out of that fourth line, every coach might be different. Travis could be different than me, but what do we want out of that fourth line? And whatever we want out of that fourth line, we're going to have to put that defenseman who's best suited for that role.
Easier to go forward to D or D to forward?
Oh, easily D to forward. Forward to D is extremely difficult. Extremely difficult.
Louis Bidone, for them, their leading scorer. A lot of their offense runs through him. What does he do best?
He does. He's everything. He could be the best player in our league, the most well-rounded player in our league, and I think he probably is. When you watch him, if you want to really break down his game, he makes plays all over the ice, and he makes quick plays. And watch him on the power play. He does things on the power play that not many players can do. And, he's got great offensive instincts, and he's a dangerous player, and he's shown that over the course of his 4 years here.
Best of luck tonight.
Thanks, Schultze.